713-526-4000 to inquire about our sustainer program. Make a difference today. This is KPFT Houston.
You are listening to 90.1 FM KPFT Houston.
Listeners should be aware that the following program contains language and audio images which may be found disturbing and may not be suitable for your snotty-nosed little brat who probably cusses like a sailor behind your back anyway. Parental discretion is advised.
Technology Bites.
Yay, Technology Bites. Hooray for Technology Bites. Welcome to the show, everyone. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
I'm Dwight.
And he's...
Roof House.
All right, Dwight. I'm not Dwight. Flicted.
Do we need an eyewash station?
Flicted has got an eye issue. And it's kind of causing me anxiety to watch them go through.
Yeah, so are you okay? You shouldn't touch Vista computers then rub your eyes. Ever.
Sorry about that. Don't mean to be kicking you. All right, well, welcome to the show, everyone. We're glad you could tune in. And you can visit us online at geekradio.com. That is our website where we... Wow, there's a pop-up on our window here on our...
Someone put in removable media, it looks like.
Ah. You should come and look at our screen. Maybe I wonder if we could direct him to use his mouse to close that screen out.
down,
that's not
left.
Even, that's in the other room.
Yeah?
Yeah, because this computer is not even this in the studio.
That's right. We thought maybe you put your thumb drive in there. All right, visit us at geekradio.com. Also, IRC, irc.cuckoo.com, and pound tech bytes or tech bytes to be completely accurate. If you don't have your own IRC client or you have one and you don't know how to use it or configure it on the fly, you can go to geekradio.com and click on the IRC link and join us there. The phone number is 713-526-5738 if you want to call in during the show tonight. We will be taking your calls after we do the Technology Bites info shot. Man, you guys, that was a great geek gathering this weekend. This
the
Friday.
Best geek mm-hmm. gathering.
It was really one.
Each
that,
I mean, one just, gets better and better.
Well, they kind of, in my mind, kind of ebb and flow. But this one just surpassed. This was like after the stock market had been down for a long time. came roaring back. It was a bull market.
I think each one of them at cons has been.
It has. I think cons better. Is a great space.
Yes.
I've been really, really happy with that overall. It's worked out even when he has other events going on there. We still find our way to take over and be a part of that space. And the whole night just evolves very well. I've been liking it. And this last one, there was some real surprise people show up that I just kind of surprised.
And we had a food truck.
You are very happy, but I don't know. I didn't get the numbers. Apparently, Cons has negotiated with a food truck previous to
right,
your...
Right, right, right. He had been...
It's not like you willed it into existence, right, right. But it was kind of cool because you had been going on about it, and then right. next
tell
thing
us,
you know, there is one.
Tell us what you had, Dwight.
I had nothing. I didn't eat.
Whoa! Yeah. Hold up.
Exactly.
Hold the phone.
The Dwight great betrayal.
Cries and cries for a food truck.
I
and
know.
One shows up, and then he doesn't eat.
Well, because that evening I had yeah. gone to dinner with my wife and not her mom... It. And we had dined on burgers.
You should have patronized it just to say you did.
Yeah, yep. It's a shame.
Next time I will.
Sure.
Next time I'll do it. All right. It was a, what kind of, what was musubi? Was that mm-hmm. what it was?
Musubi, it's like a sandwich with fried spam and other things in there.
Yes.
It was pretty good. Seaweed and some other stuff.
That was just one option.
That was one option.
One option.
There were multiple
there were
things
like
you could
others.
Get. Yeah.
Yeah. And it was really good.
Yeah, I think next time
they I'll also had try. Ramen and something else.
Well, it was a good cast of people there, and we enjoyed ourselves quite a bit. Weather was reasonable.
But, you know. It was just good vibe all around. The thing, my favorite thing of the evening was Jim Thompson's tackle box that he had Arduino'd.
That was really cool. So yeah, he took like his, you know, his fisherman's tackle box that he's got all of his electronic gear in, and then he put an Arduino, I think it was like a Nano or a Micro in there, and then he had like some really large, maybe like 10 millimeter LEDs
right.
all along the top. They changed colors, and these had a button that was lit up at the top so he could turn the stuff on and off and never
right.
lose his tackle box
it was very
again.
Simple.
It was really cool. It was simple, but it was really clean. Like he
right.
put a lot of time into it. The wiring was done really nicely. Hopefully he's listening. It was really cool to see. I think he needs to put a perimeter sensor on there to where if it gets like outside of 10 feet of his person,
yeah.
red and blue lights start to flash with sirens and stuff like that.
Yeah,
a little personal
there were all
security
kinds
device.
Of ideas people were coming up with for that, for what hit, for him to kind of make it fancier. But I like the simplicity.
So the simplicity is there, and everything else he does from this point is just code and you know, maybe
right.
another sensor or two. But that's neat to see. That's cool that stuff's
sensor.
Coming out like that.
I must have another sensor.
All right. So, yeah, we had a geek tackle box because. Jim Thompson was coming fishing for geeks.
That's right. If you have never been to a geek gathering, that's the kind of cool stuff that happens. You should come.
Yeah. You should show up. All right. So let's, we've wrapped up with pretty much all the particulars. So let's, we have the info shot, but it's pre-recorded. Pete, are you going to like lip sync with it or something?
Yeah. Good? If you listen close, you'll hear my lips moving.
All right. Well, I know Flicted's still struggling with his eye, but hopefully we can cue up the info shot.
Yeah, this is going to be interesting.
Yeah, okay, we'll see if it works.
All right.
It's the Technology Bites info shot. Technology news and commentary by Peter Hughes. Injected directly into your skull.
Nope, it's not working. All right, well, we managed to get the file downloaded and saved to a USB drive, which cannot be read by Flicted's laptop.
It's the injecting into your head that we're having an issue with right now.
We've got the news, we just can't inject.
Everyone could move slightly closer to the radio. This might make it easier for us.
At the very least, I know that Groovehouse has it on his phone. He can always hold it up to the microphone.
Phone it in.
Well, despite our best efforts, the info shot still, you know, are having a problem with it. All right, so what do we want to do? Rather than futz with this, do we want to just have Pete do it live? Oh, what? I can't hear what Groovehouse is saying.
Groovehouse said we're doing it live.
Technology Bites Info Shot. Technology news, commentary by Peter Hughes. Injected directly into your skull.
All right. Three lawmakers have introduced a bill to provide more protection from government surveillance for people who store data in the cloud. The Online Communications and Geolocation Protection Act would require U.S. law enforcement agencies to get court-ordered warrants before intercepting or getting access to electronic communications and geolocation data. This would change the 1986 Electronic Communications Privacy Act. Wow, so our privacy comes from something from 1986? Yeah, but it was introduced today by Representatives Zoe Lofgren, a California Democrat, Ted Poe, a Texas Republican, who many of you may be familiar with, and Susan DelBene, a Washington Democrat. A group of tech companies and privacy groups, collectively named the Digital Due Process Coalition, have been calling for changes to ECPA since early 2010, at least. The groups have advocated for changes because, in many cases, digital information stored in the cloud doesn't get the same legal protections as other data. Typically, you know, law enforcement officials need to get a search warrant to look at your PC or your file cabinet, but stored email information, instant messages and stuff like that in the cloud is just a subpoena, which is not nearly the burden. Lofgren said in a statement, "Privacy protections don't stop at the internet. Americans expect constitutional protections to extend to their online communications and location data." Last week we had the iPhone lock screen bug. Apparently lock screens are the big new thing, you know, since they keep people out of your phone. That was the iPhone. Well, now the Galaxy S3 has a bug. Galaxy Note 2 had a bug a few days ago, and now a similar flaw has been found on the Galaxy S3 that breaks the lock screen altogether, permitting full use of the phone. Nice. Just same thing. It's the emergency call stuff. That's what was getting them on the iPhone. So it sounds like this is just making it complicated. Basically, to replicate the bug, you need to tap the emergency call button on the lock screen, then go to the emergency contacts menu. From there, press the home button, followed quickly by the power button, and that's it. If successful, pressing the power button again will bring up the home screen right away. And what's more, the lock screen doesn't come back until you restart the handset. So, oops, that will have to be fixed. In other great news, the International Data Corporation, the IDC, they're not some kind of flaco PR firm or any of that stuff. They're the real deal. Their worldwide PC tracker reports that PC shipments in 2013 are expected to decline 1.3%. That's the world, all over the world. The forecast is based on poor holiday sales and a, quote, underwhelming, unquote, reception to the new Windows 8 platform from Microsoft and continuing economic malaise that further crimped IT budgets in the second half of 2012. Taking that one step further, the report claims that PC shipments dropped 8.3% at the end of last year, the most substantial decline recorded for a holiday ever. Even emerging market growth potential, you know, the other parts of the world that didn't have computers sitting around already, is slowing down at the same speed of growth seen in mature regions. In other news, iOS apps compared to Android apps are worse for your personal data, according to a study from risk assessment company AppThority. The iOS apps studied were more likely overall to collect and share data like your contacts, email addresses, and locations, and both platforms' apps tended to send and receive user data without encryption. The study looked at 100 free apps, 50 each on Android and iOS in five categories. 100% of the iOS apps were found to send and receive user data unencrypted, while 92% of the Android apps did the same. So you're looking for a job and you're big, you know, you're putting social media guru on your resume didn't work. Here's a place where you could get a job. You can, or here it's, you know, you don't even have to do the job interview or this sort of combines the job interview. Pizza Hut is looking for a social media manager. And the way they're going to do it is that you have a 140-second interview at South by Southwest this week. They announced it today on Twitter and Facebook. Why only 140 seconds? Because if you can sell yourself in 140 seconds, you can probably sell the company in 140 characters or fewer on Twitter. Kind of clever. Not only does this give Pizza Hut an opportunity to land a tech-savvy candidate, but it also serves as a promotional campaign for the brand, of course. If you're interested, you can go to the Pizza Hut at go to where they are at the Austin Hilton on March 10th from 1 to 5 to interview for the position. And if you do some searching, you can find info on the web about it too. And now kind of new cool stuff, since we've done all the bummer, you know, your data's at risk kind of fun stuff, you know, PC sales declining. The iWatch, of course, this is a product that Apple hasn't even announced. There's no official discussion on, but out in the world, there is a lot of articles about it. And I found two that were great because they were right near each other and they have totally opposite ideas. Swatch CEO Nick Hayek doesn't believe that an iWatch could replace the iPhone and thinks that it could be a flop because of its small display size, he said. This is a guy who makes watches, so he would know from how it might work. He says, quote, "Personally, I don't believe it's the next revolution. Replacing an iPhone with an interactive terminal on your wrist is difficult. You can't have an immense display." He also mentioned that consumers buy watches as a fashion item and prefer versatility. But that's swatches, not necessarily watches, I think. There are no concrete hints on what an Apple iWatch might look like, but a patent application suggests that Apple might be considering a wraparound design with a touchscreen and a flexible glass display. Now, I don't know that, I think on the replacing the iPhone, it seems more like a supplemental device. Just like, in a sense, Google Glass is a supplemental device to, you know, if you want to be tethered out in the world. And then on the other side, PC World has an article that says the iWatch could revolutionize mobile security. And, you know, so it's not even an announced product. It's got just rumors. But yesterday, Bloomberg reported that a device like an iWatch would have much higher profit margins than the iPad. So the business world thinks they could make a lot of money at it. Apple has filed 79 patents that relate to wearable technology, and that kind of stuff's going to be part of the iWatch. Reports about the iWatch indicate that it would be tethered to an iPhone or iPad that would provide a stream of content and alerts to the wearer, including email, caller ID, calendar info, and updates of pre-selected information like weather reports or stock quotes. While these aren't designed for the business market, some have business potential. The updates that can be displayed on iWatch are often the same updates that you'd be looking for anyways. The big thing could be security solutions.
What happened? Still playing, but then it just cut out.
Ruff, ruff,
ruff.
Ding dong.
All right, well, our best shot at an info shot. Still playing, but no audio is coming across. So is it a dead MP3? Is there just no content in the MP3? All right, well,
we don't know.
I know you don't know. I'm just trying to, like, you know, not just sit here and wait till something happens.
If only there was a radio show we could call that would give us answers to our computer problem.
Try installing the InfoShot over itself.
Did you try turning it on and off?
All right. Well, we're going to get on with the show here. And unfortunately, we still work ironing out the bugs on our InfoShot setup, but we're getting closer. Another 18 years and we might have something working.
We have to do an anniversary event shortly here.
We do.
In a month or two, a couple months.
A couple of months. June, July time frame is what we're looking at for our Technology Bites 18th anniversary.
We can vote. We'll be able
to
vote.
We can go to war.
Vote, we can go to war.
I pick the foodies.
They don't stand a chance.
All right. Well, the phone number here is 713-526-5738. Pete, did you want to wrap up? Were you listening to yourself?
Yeah. Yeah, basically the Bloomberg article said that the one of the uses for the watch would be two-factor authentication so that you could either have eliminate the passcode on a computer or an iPad or iPhone, tablet, or you could use it to be extra security so that you had to have the watch nearby and put in the passcode.
Hmm.
But, and then finally on new stuff, there was a theoretical breakthrough storing data in hard materials using the spin of electronics. With the echo I'm getting back, I can't talk without sounding like an idiot.
Okay.
And that's the news.
And that's the news.
And our call just dropped, so we've got no calls in the queue.
713-526-5738 if you want to be on the air with Technology Bites. We're just going to move right on into the call-in portion of the show.
The good thing is you're going on vacation.
So yeah,
You don't have to worry about this for two or three weeks.
I was going to offer, and I wanted to offer you guys some advice for next week when I'm not here.
Don't mess things up?
No. What? I mean, you'll do that regardless. But I was thinking that, whenever the mics go live, you guys realize that you don't know who's going to do what. And so it becomes kind of an ad hoc intro. So I was thinking,
part of the tension.
Should we plan?
That's creative tension.
One of you needs to assume the role, and not in a hateful way,
position.
Like Flickman might do, but assume the role of me. And take the lead and say, welcome to Technology Bites, and say, I'm Dwight Silverman, or I'm Proofhouse, or just be the first person to go and then work
That's
out.
That's usually the way it ends up, Particularly.
Next week, I should be able to do that, because it's spring break.
Oh, are you going to be in the studio?
I'm going to very much try to.
Okay. Well, that'll be awesome. Excellent. Pete can take over.
All right.
He's actually, he is the vice president of Technology Bites. Dwight will frantically declare, he'll be the Alexander Haig declare himself in charge. Man, have you been watching, there's a show that's on FX. Just started up a couple of weeks ago, called Americans.
Yes, really good.
And it's really set in the 80s. It's about a family of KGB agents who have, come to America, and they've assumed the role of an American family. And it's very interesting to watch. I mean, it's good. It's reasonably good drama. It's really good spy drama. But it's set in the 80s, and they've done a really... It's kind of weird to watch...
The hair is perfect.
It's kind of weird to watch a movie that's got a time feel from that time period. You might see a movie like you would expect to see a spy movie maybe set in the 50s or the 60s during the beginnings of the heart of the Cold War. But this is like the death of the Cold War. Reagan's in office. He's just... And then this one episode, he's been shot and just remembering all this 80s stuff.
Right.
And they're doing a good job with it. I'm actually kind of enjoying it. And the tech is...
Yes, the tech,
tech is so awesome. Because there are no computers, right? There's no personal computers. There's a lot of bizarre KGB radio apparatus. But there's still reel-to-reels that they're using. So
right.
there's not only the 80s tech, which is obviously out of date. But then there's the Russian tech of the 80s,
which is even more
out of
right,
date.
Right.
So it's been a kind of a... It's kind of like a madman for... 80s geeks.
One of the cool things about the most recent James Bond movie is that they backed away from almost all of the tech, and they in fact even make fun of the tech, where the guy who's playing Q gives James Bond a gun and a radio, and the radio is like a little tiny miniature, looks like a transistor radio, complete with a little tiny antenna, and you push a button. He goes, a radio and a gun, how novel. And I like
Spoiler
that
alert.
Throwback. I like that throwback. That,
I just watched the most recent James Bond movie, in fact, last week, and I liked it. For the most part, I thought it was really pretty well, but the whole nod to
the old
stuff was a little, especially when he was kind of threatening to use the ejector seat. I was like, that was a little gratuitous, but it was interesting. I liked that movie well enough. All right, 713-526-5738. Do we need to get you an eye patch? That'd probably help. No?
Are you sure?
I don't really know that would help, because it's not that, I'm sensitive to light.
Would it help, like, kind of keep that eye closed so you weren't, like, squinting it? Or could you, like, put a piece of tape on there and tape it down? Or
I'm worried about you.
The way it looks is just like you're in a lot of pain.
I'm in some pain.
Yeah. Do you need to go? Are you on a motorcycle,
Where can I go?
I don't know. The eye doctor? The all-night eye doctor?
You go to the little Walgreens clinic up there. They have a little clinic you can go in.
But they're not eye doctors. They're going to give me some aspirin.
No, they'll give you some drops or something for it.
I got a call I'm trying to take.
All right. What's that?
Groove's trying to do something.
Oh.
Can you save your pain for later? He's trying to work here.
We won't engage Flicted while you're screening phone calls for the show. My bad.
This is awesome.
Okay, show
you may or may not agree with, is Rand Paul still talking? You know, he's doing one of these
old school. Oh, he's in the filibuster, yeah.
Filibuster. Is Rand Paul still talking? And you go there and it says yes. And there's I think that may actually be an attempt at a live stream.
That's awesome.
But that's funny.
So he started this morning, like 12-something, they're going against drone strikes, right? He's got about 4 or 5 other compatriots, even someone across the aisle that's going to help him. So no one ever does old-school filibusters anymore, so they're going to go. Hopefully he's well-rested.
Right, yes. Well, I love the is suchandsuchhappening.com URLs, and that's one of them. That's excellent.
All right, so it looks like we might have a call in the queue. And we'll see if Groovehouse wants to give it to us. He's been giving us a dose of attitude here, but now we can see if he'll give us a phone call.
You want a phone call? Is that what you want before you go on your vacation? You want a little phone call?
Look, I'm sensing some hostility here. Fortunately, I won't have to put up with it for a couple of weeks. Yeah, Groovehouse. A phone call. You got?
We'll give you one.
What you got?
All right. Well, here we go. First up on the show, we're going to speak with Dave.
Dave, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hey, this is actually addressed to you, I'm assuming, to Jay. I guess this is Jay.
Oh, yeah, it's Jay.
Yeah, I want to thank you last week for the education that you provided on the information that where you talked about your website, about that picture that you took of downtown where somebody had stole it on you.
Yeah.
Yeah, I went to the website and read the article. It sounds like you got the short end of the stick. Just reading the article, if I understood it correctly.
Yeah, it was not a pleasant experience to go through. I had somebody who was threatening to sue me because I was trying to tell my side of the story, which I believed to be true,
right,
which did not jive with their side of the story. So as a result of me speaking what I believe to this day to be the truth, I was accused of libel and slander. And my attorney said, you know, just back away, step away. And that's what I did.
Yeah, are you member of PPFA, Professional Photographers of America?
No.
Oh, yeah, that sounds like they could have helped you out.
No, a lot of people, I mean, when the whole thing happened and it went viral, made the front page of Slashdot, I had a lot of people from all over the world reaching out, offering assistance, and my lawyer, who was the most sane person I dealt with, said, you know, regardless of whether you're right or wrong, if you don't want to go into litigation on this, there was nothing for me to get. There was nothing for me to have. And vindication was not worth what it was going to cost me just to have vindication. So it was a better option just to back away.
And you didn't do anything wrong.
No, I didn't. And it was one of the, you know, and for me, that was a tough position to be in because I don't like for people to get away with that kind of stuff. But it was for my sanity and for the sake of just, you know, having a normal life, it was better to just let it go.
Well, it made me angry just reading it because I'm a professional photographer, and if that happened to me, I would be furious.
Well, you know, and I was, and it's an ongoing battle, you know, not just that situation, but my photographs continue to be, you know, misappropriated, and that happens. But as I said, we were talking about last week, you know, I look at it like, you know, a department store owner, you know, or a grocery store owner, there's a certain amount of shrink, you know, but the alternative to that is to keep all of my stuff, you know, hidden away on my hard drive and try to organize showings of my photos in physical form so nobody can steal them. But I wouldn't get nearly the exposure or the audience that I get by putting them online. So,
well, the shot at downtown I thought was a great shot. I'd taken some from downtown, but that one was very nice. Good job.
Well, thank you.
Yes, sir. So I wanted to just say thanks for the education because I didn't know Number one, you can copy stuff like that, and number two, that copyright laws are not necessarily there to protect you. Not necessarily.
Well, they are there to protect you.
But it didn't necessarily work in your case.
Well, I mean, had I wanted to pursue it, it would have worked. It would have just cost me time and money to do it.
Yeah, like I said, you just got the short end of the stick, it sounds like.
Well, it's sort of. But I will say this. It was an education, and I'm not. And I will say also that because of the publicity that the whole incident got, I've met more photographers and more professionals, and my social network in terms of photography has increased tenfold.
Oh, that's great.
And I've made some very outstanding contacts, both in the photography field as well as in the intellectual property legal field, copyright law. I've got a lot of great contacts, and it's an ongoing discussion. I think, you know, in my role as an IT or a geek broadcaster, that I want to educate people, and so I have to have the experience, and I feel like I've learned a lot, and that can help other photographers.
Well, listening to you last week when you were talking about it, you were pretty passionate about what you were talking about.
Well, yeah, I'm very passionate on this subject.
Yeah. Well, I just wanted to say thanks, and I appreciate the education that I got from reading the article.
All right. Well, I appreciate you letting me know.
Okay.
Have a good day. All right. Let me see if I have managed to successfully tweet that photo or not. Yes, I have. So if you go to twitter.com/JLee, I've posted a picture of the KPFT webmaster's computer setup, which is awesome. If you ever get to come to KPFT and take the tour, make sure they include that on the tour. I don't know if it's part of the tour or not. I don't even know if we have a tour, actually. But
he's got to be there, and it has to be open. It
has to be open. But he's taken over what is essentially a closet. Pretty good size closet, but he's got a giant wooden desk in there, and he's got a very comfortable looking recliner in there, and he's got one big monitor and two monitors in a portrait on either side, and he's also got a picture frame that he's got a projector shooting another computer image into, and under the computer itself is not in a case. It's all mounted on the wall. The components are mounted on the wall, the power supply and the motherboard and everything, and the cables run down the side. It's quite amazing, actually. And fortunately, I brought my fisheye so I could get a photo of it. So it looks pretty good. I'm pretty impressed with the webmaster setup here. But so it's not often that I get to come to KPFT and geek out before I get on the air and geek out.
Yes, Dwayne was up there, and I think he was bemused by our
interest.
Yes, because yes. We were all excited there. Ooh,
look, and it's been there for a while. We didn't know about it.
Groovehouse knew about it, and he didn't share.
What?
He knew about it. He didn't tell us about it.
He knew it was there. So, all right, 713-526-5738, 713-526-KPFT. If you want to be on the air, all the lines are open, and Groovehouse is just sitting there doing nothing. And Flicked is, hopefully his eye is
slowly. It's rubbing his eye.
Yeah. Well, you know, you got to be careful getting stuff in your eye. All right. So 713-526-5738 if you want to be on the air with us. We have all of our lines are open. We'd be happy to talk tech, talk computers with you. Whose phone was that? Was that yours, Barrett?
I thought mine was turned all the way down.
Not mine.
It may have been mine. It's down now.
Yes.
Okay, we want to make sure you're not disrupting the show. This should liberate all of Dwight's. Hey, you know, have you been having any problems with your iPhone 5 giving you a no SIM?
Nope. Mine. Although that occasionally will happen with iPhones. I've seen that happen. In fact, my wife had it happen on her iPhone 4. She had to take it back when she first got it. And you just take it back and they give you
a new SIM?
They give you a new phone.
Really?
Yeah.
There was a phone problem and not a SIM problem?
Yeah. Apparently it's the way it seats into the in there. But I've not heard of it happening actually for a 5, but I know that
mine I have to, if I take the SIM out and I dust it off or clean it, it seems to start working just fine again. So I wonder if it has anything to do. I mean, I have actually removed my SIM and replaced my SIM with another, you know, foreign SIM when I travel.
So, on the 5? On your 5, yeah.
Yeah. It's my first iPhone, so yeah, the 5.
Right.
But yeah, so I'm looking forward to this overseas trip coming up because I'll buy a SIM card when I'm there. Hopefully find a nano SIM and get some data on my phone. All right. Well, it looks like the lines are lighting up and we're getting some calls in. We're going to give Groovehouse the opportunity to give us a call over here. But if he's tied up answering all these incoming calls, we may have to go ahead and
just grab one.
So why don't we do that? We'll grab line. Oh, what? There's Groovehouse. He's grabbing his headphones. I want to give Groovehouse the opportunity to feed us the call.
All righty. Let's do it then.
All right. Who do we have?
All right. Up next on the show, we're going to speak with Andrew.
Andrew, you're on the air with Technology Bytes.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call and enjoy your show.
Thank you.
I had a quick question. I bought a used computer. It's a Pentium computer with a 3.2 gigahertz CPU. But I was loading a video game for my daughter, and I get this message, OpenGL 1.3 not supported. And I'm not sure what that means.
OpenGL is a video.
It's like a all-platform graphic library that's been around for 10 or 15 years. It's a lot of games. I think it's beyond 1.3, so chances are you might have, like, an old version of the game.
Yes, and it's an older game. It's probably four or five years old.
Yeah, and you've got a newer version.
It works on one computer fine, but I got this another computer and tried to load the game, and that's what I keep getting.
It's probably the older graphics card driver doesn't recognize – the newer graphics card driver doesn't recognize the older game. And so
do I need to upgrade the graphics driver?
Probably need to upgrade the game.
Yeah, I think it's the game. I'm looking right now to see if you can have multiple versions of OpenGL installed, but it's definitely trying to pull an earlier – it needs an earlier version of OpenGL. I mean, is the game that important? Is there not, like, a newer version of the game, or is there not another game that she could play?
Well, the game in question is called Speedy Eggbert, which is like a clone of Super Mario Brothers or something.
Right.
I enjoy playing the game, and so does my daughter. So
it's probably written for older hardware and drivers, and I don't know that it's compatible with what you have now. If it's a 4 or 5 year old game, it was probably pressing it to get it to work on an XP.
The one thing you might try doing this is on Windows XP.
Windows
XP. Oh no, you said you bought a used computer.
Right, a used computer.
How old is the computer?
Well, from what I can tell, it's a Pentium 4 computer, so I don't know
if the game is 4 to 5 years old and it's a Pentium 4 computer,
it should work.
It should run on that. What you might try doing is go ahead and get the latest driver and see what happens. For that
latest driver for the OpenGL?
No,
for the graphics card.
Go, you know, is the computer a name brand? Is it a Dell or HP or something?
I think it's a Dell, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, if it's a Dell, then you can go to the Dell support site and look up the model number and download the latest video driver for the video card, and that might help.
So two solutions. One is to get the latest driver or get the latest game.
Go do this too. Go to opengl.org. And they have updated OpenGL drivers. You'll have to know what kind of video card you have, whether it's like an NVIDIA or it's S3 graphics chip or it's an Intel, you know, integrated graphics card. But you can download the appropriate Windows drivers for whatever card you have. So it's opengl.org.
Okay.
Even just Google, and it's on the Getting Started page. I Googled for install OpenGL, and it's on Google. It's the very first hit. If you go there, you can go into system. You can check out your graphics card and look for the chipset. It'll be like one of the 4 or 5 listed, and then follow the link, download that, and then see if the game won't work.
Okay, well, I'll try that. Thanks very much for your help, and I do enjoy your show.
Thank you very much. Thanks for your call.
All right, thanks.
All right, 713-526-5738 if you want to be on the air with us. 713-526-KPFT. We have 3 calls in the queue, and Groovehouse is going to dish one up to us right now as soon as he gets some microphone.
There we go.
All right. Who do we have up next?
All right. Up next on the show, we're going to speak with Alan.
Hi, Alan. You're on the air with Technology Bytes.
Hey, the question I told him I was going to ask, I completely changed my mind. So,
all right. Well, I have to let you go then.
No, don't do that. Okay. So, here's the situation. I helped this guy, older guy, on his computer and stuff. Good friend of mine, many years. He had a laptop, And on download.com there is a, I don't know if it's open source or freeware, it's a backup program. It's like it's a very popular, highly rated backup program. It's like EUSIS or something like that.
EUSIS, yeah.
EUSIS. They have like a partition program, and they also have a backup program. So he, on his laptop, yeah, he was running a Vista, and he was backing up his hard drive, you know, weekly, and his hard drive crashed, or I don't know what happened because I wasn't involved with, you know, trying to get it fixed. So he calls me on the phone. He says, Alan, I got a problem. My laptop crashed, and, you know, I gave it to the repair guy, and I bought a new laptop. It's running Windows 8, and I need your help getting my old data. So it was backed up to an external drive. So I'm using TeamViewer to do this, so because he lives in California. So I get on there, and I go into the program, and it seems like the only way to restore it is it wants to image the drive to the new drive. You know, it prompts you, it says, well, you know, we're going to overwrite your operating system. I'm like, no, can't talk. So then it has another feature to mount it as a drive. So I mounted it, and if I saw all his folders there, and the folder I wanted to get into, he's the user he is Jerry, and he was an administrator. He was the only one on the laptop. So then I double click. Now this is a drive that has been mounted.
Right, I understand, and I think this is getting a little long in the tooth. But if I were
okay,
the long and short of it is that you've basically loaded up the image, the drive image, as a drive, so you can browse the files. And if I'm going to guess, you can't get access to the folder that you want to pull the files out of, right?
Have I told you I love you?
No, not no, lately.
Okay. Go ahead.
What you want to do, because when he created that file folder, belongs to the user that was on that computer.
Okay.
So what you have to do is take ownership of the folder. And I don't, you know, there's an option if you go to the folder and you right click it and you go to properties or something. I forget what it is, but what you're looking for is you're looking to change permissions on that folder so that his user account on the new computer can take that over.
Okay. All right. I'm going to try that. My other question is how come when I use the restore function, it won't let me just like browse for files?
Because what he did was, is he created an image. He created a snapshot of the drive rather than backing up folders. Just as, you know, there's two ways you can back up a computer. There's one where you just take a snapshot or a drive image of it. And that's designed so that you could take that whole computer lock, stock, and barrel and re-image the computer back. It's not very helpful.
All right, so you're saying in Norton Ghost, like when you go into it, I'm switching gears. Like in Norton Ghost, when you go into it and like look for files, it's mounting the drive the same way this other program is doing.
Yeah, the Ghost Explorer allows you to take a look at that image and allows you to update or pull out specific files if you care to. Yes, so that sounds like this software that you're using has a similar feature where you're basically mounting the image as a drive and allowing you to pick. That's a very cool feature. That's very handy because that's not always readily apparent or obvious with a backup where you can actually browse the contents of your backup file and pull that out like that. That sounds like a very cool feature.
Yeah, it's a good program. So, all right, so I should be able to change permissions.
Well, what you need is Google search, take ownership of a file or folder, and you'll find some instructions on how to do that. There's a couple of steps you have to go through, but it's not that hard.
Now, can I ask my original question, or have I taken my allotted time?
No, go ahead.
Okay, one of you guys is a photographer, right?
One of us, maybe two.
Okay. All right. I'm a musician I don't have like money to pay a professional photographer. I've got a gig in Galveston and they want like some photos and I got to put something together. Is there any way I got like, you know, $150-$200 like digital camera. Is there any way out of that camera to like get some self portraits that look decent or?
Sure.
Any recommendations, like with lighting or what do I do?
Well, you know, what I would, like Groovehouse said, I would get a tripod.
You got a tripod, I have one.
and get a, you know, aim it at a place on the wall where you know, or wherever you're going to shoot as a backdrop.
Okay.
And frame it up, you know, and then go, and then learn how to use the timer on the camera and then set the timer so it'll go off in 10 seconds and then go walk over there.
No, I've got that. That's the easy part. The thing is, you know, I take those and it looks like I just got arrested or something.
Well, yeah, that's the hard part is actually coming up with good content. So what I would consider doing is get some kind of light source where you know that space is illuminated,
and wear a Dr. Seuss hat.
Okay.
Well, I mean, so, the worst thing you could do is hit yourself with a flash. The flash is going to wash out all the color and it makes the picture look really harsh and there's not good contrast.
What kind of lighting? Like halogen or fluorescent or?
Whatever you can get close to white, you know, like LED light would be good. It'd give you a nice, good, solid white
balance. Or do it outside in the golden hour.
Yeah, you can go outside and do it when the sun is like, you know, about an hour from sunset.
Oh, perfect. Okay.
And so you could, like, go out there, maybe get your guitar and stand next to your hot rod and do it like that. But natural or, you know, available light, rather than hitting straight on with a flash, you just look like a dead fish.
And the thing to remember is you're shooting digital, so shoot 100 pictures, shoot 200 pictures, you know, take as many as you need to get a good shot.
But once you, okay. But if you like, Groovehouse and I were talking during the news. He's been doing some product photography where he's using a steady light. So he's got a white light that he basically puts on the subject, and he gets the lighting the way he likes it, and then he lets the camera. You know, you could almost do this in auto mode if you've got a smart enough camera, but you know, you could tweak it a little bit for really good photography. But in auto mode, it will take a look at that light because the light's already on. It'll set the exposure and the shutter speed and take that photo. And as long as it's well lit by something, then the shutter speed will be fast enough to where it'll, you know, it won't give you a blurry picture.
You know, I think lighting's a key because you keep. I think I'm going to go out in the golden hour and put a halogen on and see what happens.
Or you could sell that camera. And for $150 or $200, and then hire somebody to take some good shots of you.
Yeah, I could do that, and then my wife would have me sleeping out in the backyard.
Well, you are a musician.
Depends on how good those pictures are. Those pictures are good.
Depends
enough.
On whether or not this lands you a good gig, and you start, you know, who knows? You might be on the doghouse for other reasons.
Yeah, well, your lips to God's ears. So
take a couple racy shots for her.
Right.
Your wife probably would like to see
only the Dr. Seuss hat.
Right, right. You know what? She wouldn't be impressed.
To the George Costanza pose.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Well, anything else?
Okay. All right.
Have a good night.
Thank you. Thank you. Great show. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Have a good night.
Okay. Bye.
All right. Yeah.
Looks like a caller was concerned about Flicted's eye.
Yeah, somebody said if there's something wrong with Flicted's eye, he should go to the emergency room.
Yeah, that my mom is giving me the same advice.
Yeah.
That's true.
Especially since you're over here holding it and wincing. And
you look like you're in a lot of pain still.
Yeah.
At the very least, what you may want to do is go into the bathroom in there and rinse it out if you can.
He's probably scratched something good.
He's scratched something.
It's basically, every time he blinks, it's irritating it.
Right, right.
And,
right.
Don't wash it out. Go rub some dirt in it.
There you go.
All right, so we got probably time to get another call or so in before the top of the hour. Groovehouse?
Yes.
Who's up next?
Up next on the show, we're going to speak with Albert.
Albert, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Good evening, gents.
Good evening.
My question is, I have a BlackBerry that I use just mainly email is my biggest feature, and obviously the phone. And my wife has gone through a couple of different smartphones that have issues with dealing with Outlook, syncing with Outlook and that kind of thing. And that's real important to me, and I'm tired of waiting for the BlackBerry 10 to maybe arrive, maybe not. So I was wondering if the iPhone, is there good apps that can make that seamless
how do you get your mail? Is it from a private personal account, Potmail, or is it Exchange?
It is not Exchange. It's I guess it's Hotmail. It's I used to do Pop 3, but now I just do the I guess it's called Hotmail.
Well, the iPhone has good connectors for Yahoo
and Hotmail
and Hotmail, yep, and Gmail. So it will pull down your contacts and all of that. It's really pretty seamless.
Okay. Register.com is who the email is through, but I thought that Hotmail is just kind of a generic.
Hotmail is a service provided by Microsoft. It's a free email service.
And actually, that brand is going away. It's all going to be Outlook.com.
Outlook.com, yeah.
Okay. And then the second thing is, I have a server at my business, and it's about three to four years old. What is the typical life expectancy of a small business? And we use it, obviously, it's on all day, every day.
Servers can run for a long, long time, years and years.
Small business, probably 8 to 12 years. Not that it'll last that long, but a lot of small businesses tend to want to make them last as long as they can. I think a lot of enterprise shops for servers will say 5 to 7 or maybe 3 to 5 they've got a lot of money. If they don't have as much money, they'll say 5 to 7.
All right. So so I don't have to worry about that for a few more years. That's good. Well, you guys do a wondrous job, and I enjoy y'all every week.
You should worry a little bit about it.
You might want to do backups or something.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, back it up.
Well, no, we back up. I've got on site, off site, out of site backup services. And one question on that is, I have an IT company that comes in. If something I see that something's wrong, they jump on and check it out. But defragging and that kind of stuff, is that you should do that with a server?
System maintenance should be run.
What kind of server is it?
What, yeah, that's a good
question. What OS is it running?
Server 2003, I think.
2003 is NTFS.
It's Microsoft, the Dell T100, I think.
I think so.
Although some of the, I'm not sure at which point it did that, but didn't one of the server versions have automated
auto defrag? Maybe.
Yeah.
I don't know, but it may be 2010.
Yeah, you know, defrag really depends on how much writing to it and erasing from it you're doing. I mean, if you're constantly changing the file system and you're running, you might want to set up some kind of.
And especially if you're creating files of a lot of different sizes,
right,
or really different sizes.
It can't hurt to kick off a defrag once in a while and do regular system maintenance, but it really depends on how you're using the server. If it's working and it's running fine, it's probably okay.
Okay. Well, listen, I appreciate it again, and keep up the good work.
All right. Thanks. Have a good night.
Thanks. Bye.
All right. All right. 713-526-5738 if you want to be on the air with us tonight. We are taking your calls. Be happy to take your calls. Be on the air. We're going to have to take a short break here at the top of the hour, which is coming up. But we do have time to take another call or two before that. 713-526-KPFT, 713-526-5738. Groovehouse,
yes.
Who's up?
Up next, we're going to speak with Lori.
Lori, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hi, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Oh, pretty good. Listen, have you guys heard of Commotion Wireless?
I've not heard any commotion about Commotion Wireless. Mm-hmm. I'm not familiar with them.
Can you Google them before we talk about it? It's like something that they use like when they try to block internet. It's for local people, so you can be hi-fi wherever you go. And I'm just wondering like the pros and cons of it.
Well, you're asking me to familiarize myself with a with a product and then give you the pros and cons.
That's right, because your guys are so smart. You can do it just like that.
Yeah, it looks awesome. I would invest in it heavily. Okay, next.
I'll call back next two weeks.
Well, Community Wireless, right?
No, Commotion Wireless.
Right, Commotion Wireless looks like it's a Community Wireless. Let's see, connect with others.
It's mesh, yeah.
It's mesh networking.
Yes.
All right, determine communication needs, interest, willingness to participate, help, start. So what is it that you want?
Is there any cons to doing something like that?
What's your end goal?
I'm just curious. Like, I'm just worried, like, if you bring it out something like, you know how you always hear about identities that people selling, is it secure?
It's going to be secure. The two biggest roadblocks to this is going to be technical know-how, because you're doing mesh networking and it involves a lot of setup. And it's also going to be, you've got to have the density. If you're the only one that's doing it, mesh isn't going to get you anywhere. You've got to have enough people to where the network traffic can hop to hop to hop to where it gets to whatever's actually connecting it to the internet.
Okay.
But what would be your purpose for setting this up?
I don't really have a purpose at this point. I was just curious if it was a safe thing, just use it instead of doing, just as an alternative.
An alternative to what?
I don't really know, I guess.
I mean, you know, there are plenty of things that are out there that exist, you know, and whether or not they're useful or secure or they work or not is not always easy to tell. It's better to approach it to say, okay, I'm looking at this and this looks like something I could use to do blah. And then you can be able to determine if it's going to meet the needs of blah or not. But if you're just looking at it because you've discovered it and you know, okay, here's this thing, Commotion Wireless, it exists. I didn't even know I needed a mesh network. Now I know what one is and I want one.
Can I, like, get rid of my internet and then use that instead?
No.
That's not what it's for.
The deal with mesh networking is if you've got, like, a remote place or you've got, like, for instance, like a farming community or something, and it's prohibitively expensive to get wireless out there, what people are doing is they're bringing in a single drop, one wireless drop, where someone's paying for a connection to the internet, and then everyone else uses mesh networking around there. And instead of installing a whole bunch of fixed, you know, expensive gear, the idea is that as long as one device is within range of another device that's within range of that, you know, that LAN drop or, you know, the connection to the internet, everyone goes through that. It's not just a magical way to get free Wi-Fi.
Okay.
It's like a chain.
It's a chain. So what it would do is if you had a whole community or like an artist community or farming community or something and you wanted to share, that would be a very good candidate for you guys to set up. But again, if it's just one person, you're not going to be able to do it. You need a lot of people to go in with you.
All right.
That's what I needed to know. Thank you.
All right. Good luck. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
All right. So, yes. I have to understand what it is.
There's nothing wrong with coming across wireless packages or any kind of software and just playing with it to see what it is. I mean,
right.
Exploring is good,
no,
but it's not a cure-all to having to pay for Wi-Fi or having to pay for, you know, broadband.
All right. Well, we need to take a short break here. We're coming up on the top of the hour here on Technology Bites, and it's important that we take our break. I just need a nap or something. I wonder if I can get a nap in.
We were just talking. I think maybe, you know, we should have some outro music for the top of the hour.
That'd be cool, too. Yeah, we should do that. All right. Well, you're listening to Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
I'm Dwight.
And he's
Groovehouse.
We'll be right back after this.
You're invited to KPFT's 43rd birthday Big Top Bash.
Under the big tent at McGonigal's Mucky Duck, 2425 Norfolk off Kirby.
On Sunday, March the 10th from noon till 8.
These are some of the amazing artists who'll be playing. Lisa Morales Band.
Uncle Lucius.
Matt Harlan.
Patrice Pike.
The Mastersons.
The Carper Family.
Craig Kinsey and Friends.
Plus, we're still working on more.
There'll be food, beer, a silent auction.
Be an early adopter and get your tickets online now at kpft.org.
That's KPFT's 43rd birthday bash. Sunday, March the 10th, starting at noon. Be there.
KPFT Houston.
You can find KPFT on the social networking sites Twitter and Facebook? You certainly can, and we'd love you to add us as a friend and get us connected with friends of yours. Join our fan page and check out a special video message from General Manager Dwayne Bradley, as well as keep up with KPFT programmers and staff. visit facebook.com/KPFT Houston to join us. To follow us, visit twitter.com/KPFT. With both, you can link up with other KPFT listeners, get the latest news about the station, and find lots of extras. It's fun, so catch up with KPFT online. Again, on Twitter, visit twitter.com/KPFT. On Facebook, visit us at facebook.com/KPFT Houston. This is commercial-free, listener-sponsored Pacifica Radio, 90.1 KPFT Houston.
Hey, Barrett, what's happening?
I don't know.
Well, room around town.
Interrupt this skit to bring you...
Barrett time! Barrett time! Barrett time!
Yeah. That means it's time for...
Barrett time!
Yeah. Anyway. Take it away, Barrett.
All right. A super quick Barrett time tonight just to bring you up to speed with some of the meetups happening the next week or two. If you're into the Ruby programming language and have always wanted to be in a brigade, next Tuesday night is your night. The Houston Ruby Brigade, whose next meeting is Tuesday, March 12th at 7 p.m., is for anyone looking to share or learn more about Ruby, Ruby on Rails, and or Sinatra. That's not Francis Albert, a.k.a. Frank Sinatra, but rather a web development framework named after the aforementioned chairman of the board. Ruby is a dynamic programming language. It's often compared with Perl and Smalltalk, having been named after the birthstone of one of the creator's colleagues before the first line of code had ever been written. Ruby sought to be a scripting language that was more powerful than Perl and more object-oriented than Python. In fact, the creator stated at a Google Tech Talk that he hoped to see Ruby help every programmer in the world to be productive, to enjoy programming, and to be happy. That's right. Ruby equals happiness plus plus. While this may fly in the face of languages like Lisp and Assembly, it's proven a winning formula for Ruby. One of the cool things about Ruby is that you can write code in several different styles: functional, object-oriented, imperative, and reflective. Let's all take a moment to reflect on that. Wow, it's almost like we're programming. Anyway, all these things factor in to make Ruby a solid first programming language. And best of all, it's absolutely free. There are a great number of tutorials for the beginner out there, but if you want some actual humans to help you out, the Houston Ruby Brigade meets at 7 p.m. on Tuesday. Again, March 12th at Start Houston, located in my old residence, actually, at 1121 Delano, just east of downtown. The group organizes via meetup.com, so be sure to RSVP before the 30 or so available seats are taken. And a little bit of trivia, Ruby's nation of origin, Japan. Now, if all programming languages are Greek to you, and you're the type that likes to lay hands on things, the A-plus special interest group at HAL-PC meets tomorrow night at 6 to delve into the insides of your computer. So whether you're studying for the A-plus certification or just exploring what's inside your rig, the A-plus SIG will give you hands-on experience with the entire PC. Motherboards, video cards, USB ports, and even the inner workings of the operating system. Anyone with a curiosity about how all these things come together to make a working personal computer are welcome to attend. The HAL-PC headquarters is on 4543 Post Oak Place Drive, just behind Micro Center on the West Loop. That's where you want to be. Hit www.hal-pc.org for details and directions. And finally, if you've had enough of junk science, pseudoscience, superstitions, astrologers, homeopaths, and spirit channelers, maybe you should just turn off FX and head to brunch with the greater Houston Skeptic Society, where you can brunch skeptically with other scientists, science promoters, rationalists, and critical thinkers for some refreshing and sane conversation. The Houston Skeptic Society is dedicated to promoting, critical thinking, skeptical inquiry, and the scientific method, focusing primarily on these processes, giving ancillary, though no less important, attention to the conclusions drawn from applying them. I just don't know, though. The Society meets Sunday, March 17th at noon at El Real Tex-Mex Cafe at 1201 Westheimer, not too far from the radio station here in the Montrose. And before anyone out there gets bent out of shape, the Skeptic Society tends to shy away from religion, leaving you to form your own conclusions. So whether or not you believe in the end of days, this is definitely the end of Barrett time. That's it for your Gym of the Week, and that's that for Barrett time.
All right. Nice Barrett time.
I don't think they actually have a skeptics meeting.
I but remain unconvinced.
Yeah, I'm not buying it.
All right, 713-526-5738 is the number to call if you'd like to be on the air with Technology Fight. 713-526-KPFT. Groovehouse?
Yes.
Who's up next?
Up next on the second half of the show, we are going to speak with Jerry.
Jerry, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
How you doing?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing good. I just want to ask you a question about a computer that I just purchased. And it has Spanish language on it. And I speak Spanish, but only when I'm sleeping.
Fortunately, your computer can sleep as well.
That's true, but it doesn't work good for me, you know. So I was trying to I tried to go to the control panel and change the regional language, regional settings, and then the keyboard language. It didn't work out.
What operating system are you on?
It's Windows 7 Professional.
So did it come from Mexico or?
I don't know. I bought it on Craigslist.
Bought it on Craigslist. Yeah. Did it come with the original discs or anything?
No. It just the CD. I mean the computer itself. It was a good deal. That's why I bought it.
Do this. Go to Windows Update. Uh-huh. Look in the optional updates, and there's a set of language packs.
Right.
Download the English U.S. language pack.
Will it change like all the names and all the icons?
It will make your
Well, you know, you have to apply it. Once you download it, you have to switch to English.
Right. And that is in the regional
settings.
Okay. Yeah, that's true, because it was on the list, but it was on the list written like in Spanish, like English.
Right. You'll be able to get, just make sure you have the English language pack.
Okay.
It looks like there's two different ways to change the languages. There's a display language and there's input language. You want to make sure that you change both.
Right.
Okay. No problem. I just want to ask you a final question. Just in case this is like my option number two, would it be safe to just like get an operating system disk and just like overlay it on top of this one without erasing all the programs that it has?
I've never tried to do it cross language.
Okay.
I'm not sure what it would save and what it would replace.
When you first install a Windows operating system, it asks you what language, but if it's already set in a different language, I don't know if it would give you that option. Or if it's already installed, okay. I don't know if it does that. But on a clean install, it asks you that question.
Okay. All right.
Since it's a used computer and these programs were pre-installed, I mean, you're going to be in trouble down the road if anything happens to the computer and you need to reinstall any of the programs because you don't have the disks.
Yeah.
So it's one of the drawbacks of buying a used computer on Craigslist.
Yeah.
Hope you saved a lot of money.
I mean, with the money you saved, I mean, you could go out and you could buy a copy, you know, a legit copy of Windows 7, back up all your data, and then just get a clean, fresh install.
I really do have it. But the thing is, I don't want to do it unless I know for sure that I'm not going to lose some of the good programs that it has.
Right. All right. Well, good luck.
Thank you very much. You guys are great.
All right. Thank you for your call.
Okay, thanks.
All right.
He's going to lose Senor Clippy.
Senor Clippy.
I think that would be Clippito.
Clippito.
Clippito?
Yeah, because Clippy's kind of a diminutive form of Clip.
Well, there is no Clip. Mr. Clippy or Mr. Clip on Windows 7, is there?
Surely you can add him back in.
Don't ruin the joke.
Gone.
Well, no.
Yeah.
Mr. Clip is Office.
Well, yeah, Clippy, yeah. It could be any kind of...
So Office 2013?
2003. Office XP, I think, was Clippy.
I think instead it's Mr. Ribbony.
I think Windows XP has like the little dog when you do your search.
You can switch them out. You can have whatever annoying helper you like to offer suggestions that don't actually accomplish anything.
Replace the paperclip as the default.
Well, the paperclip was
and then
the
it
office.
Got killed.
I miss Bob.
No, you don't.
He misses you.
I had friends who loved Microsoft Bob.
I loaded Bob on my Mac.
You can get Clippy in Office 2013 still for Windows 8.
Really?
Yes. He's updated. But he's there.
But they offensive. Killed him off at some point. I guess they brought him back. He's a zombie Clippy now.
Zippy.
Clippy dos Dios.
I see you're trying to write an email. Can I eat your brains?
Oh, funny. All right. 713-526-5738 if you want to be on the air with us. All of our lines are open. 713-526-KPFT.
All of our eyes are open except for one afflicted's.
Eye problem by Mac. I see you want to have a college show. Would you like to have some callers? 713-526-573. I'm worried about your eye. Really...
I don't think putting your hand over it's going to help. It might be making it worse.
Well,
it's pretty drippy.
Senior Drippy.
Yellow
Senior
matter custard. Drippy. Yeah. Dripping from a dead afflicted's eye.
Afflicted's eye.
Oh, man. All right. 713-526-5738. We're taking computer calls, technology questions, and eye advice.
Medical eye advice.
If anybody out there is an eye doctor,
come to the station.
Stat.
Flicked had a child jab his finger into his eye and scratch probably his cornea.
Leave those kids alone, man.
And he knows where that finger was before it it struck.
You better have a hearty immune system or else. All right, 713-526-573. I see a phone is ringing. We got a call coming in. So I took that picture and I defished it a little bit.
So, can you do that?
Yeah. And take the fish
just
out.
Just kind of flatten it out?
Yeah. So as it... looks like, let's see, that's what it looks like, fished and then defished. So still mesmerized by the computer setup of our webmaster here at KPFT.
All right, so we got a call there.
Yeah, I see that. All right, let's go ahead and take it, and then we'll let Groovehouse give us the next one. Michael, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Thanks for taking the call.
No problem.
So it's a question about hard drive partitions. The way I've set up this Windows 7 installation is that I partitioned the sort of the root drive, the C drive, to be, you know, a couple of gigabytes bigger than the operating system was going to require.
Right.
And then everything else was going to be for storage, and then I have another drive for backup and that sort of thing. But what's happening is that the C drive is getting filled somehow, and I don't really understand why it's getting filled.
Temp files and all kinds swap files, all kinds of stuff goes in there that tends to grow once you actually do the install.
How much space did you allot on that C drive?
Let's see here. I've got about 30 gigabytes.
How large is the overall drive, like the physical size of the drive that you've partitioned up?
Well, let's see. I guess that would be, 30 plus. It's like a 500 gigabyte drive that's split 30 and then.
So you allocated 30 gigs for your operating system install. Is it getting overly full?
Yeah, I mean, I have like maybe 700 megabytes left. So I mean,
that's no good.
You know, it's probably
one of the things you can do that might help. One of the things you can do that might help would be to move the swap file, the virtual memory file, over to one of the other drives, which you could do.
Okay, where would that be located?
That is in... I just had a Windows virtual.
You actually have to go into the control panel and tell it where the swap file is going to be written out to.
You can do it by right-clicking on My Computer and doing Properties, and one of the... there's a Hardware Management tab in one of them. I'm trying to bring up Windows here real quick. And that will let you go in and decide how big the swap file is, the virtual file is, and where it lives. And so you can put it
called,
on a different way.
So in Windows 7, it's called a swap file?
Well, no, it's called virtual memory. Let me see.
Virtual memory. Okay.
Yeah, hold on.
Yeah, it's still called a swap file by people like us.
Yes. While Dwight's looking at that, you can go in and you can actually expand or you can shrink partitions. You could take that 30-gig partition and make it a little bit larger within Windows 7 if you wanted to give yourself some more.
I don't know what the recommended size is for an operating system.
I would give it about 60 gig.
I would double, what you've got.
I'd give it about 60 gig. Yeah. You can non-destructively increase the size of that in Windows 7.
Yeah, you can basically take your partition and expand it to, bit larger.
Yeah, if you go to, like, to computer and then manage and storage, there is a disk management tool that will let you...
Because the swap file is really only going to range, you know, between like 2 and 10, I guess 2 and 10 gig or somewhere in there, 2 to 5 gig on a swap file. So it's going to be fluctuating, but that shouldn't be too
much. And you really shouldn't go to swap until you run out of RAM, really. So if you've got a lot of system RAM, you shouldn't use that much to swap file.
Then that kind of like leaves it there until it interacts with it again, I think. But I'm not positive on that. So you can, you can free up some space, but maybe not enough. I think the idea of expanding your operating system partition might be a better option. Yes.
What was the idea behind partitioning the drive like that? I know that like in the old Unix world and Linux world, you'd have slices and it was very important to partition, but now why not have just a huge monolithic partition? What was the thinking behind that?
Oh, well, yeah, it was a kind of an interim situation where I was trying to move a bunch of data around and have a backup. Mm-hmm. And so I just, and then one of the drives I had failed. So it was, just between things. And kind of what I was thinking about, and again, maybe this was a bad thought because now obviously the drives are pretty inexpensive, but the idea was, okay, I'll have this partition would just be the operating system and everything else on that same hard drive would be sort of primary data. And then my other hard drive would be the backup for all the data. And it was just in a way of just organizing it, but maybe it's
a cool way to do it, and I'm with you on that. But the idea, the hard part with it is that you're putting in, like, instead of this, like, you know, like think about like wall partitions, instead of the sliding partition that you can kind of move around as you need more size, as you need more things, you've kind of cemented it in and put in like steel girders, and you've made it kind of hard to move. Even if you want to take that 30 gig partition and expand it, the way that the Windows 7 built-in stuff does it, you actually have to delete the partition behind it. So you'd be losing like all your data stuff. Maybe what you want to do is if you can't free up enough room by moving the swap or by moving the temp files and stuff like that, you can actually merge the two partitions to make yourself some more room. And then it no longer matters, but then you lose your organizational trick there.
I gotcha. Okay, that makes sense. Yeah. Okay, well, I appreciate the advice, guys. Thanks again.
All right, thanks for your call.
Good luck. All right, bye-bye.
All right, well, we got a lot of calls all of a sudden.
Yes, we
did. Groovehouse was busy.
Yes, I was.
Busy.
I was busy.
Busy. All right, Groovehouse.
Word.
Who's up?
Word. Up next on the show, we're going to speak with Dorian.
Dorian.
Hello. How you doing?
Good. You're on the air with Technology Bytes. What can we do for you?
Well, I have one, actually kind of two questions, but nothing that simple. Just how I got a new Mac. I was thinking about getting a new Mac for a long time. And on my what's it called, the PC, I was able to hide files. You know how you hide files and they don't show... I just can't figure out how to do that. I want to know how to do that on a Mac.
Who are you hiding the files from? Just like the casual lookers or like...
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't understand the full question there.
Who are you trying to hide the files from? Are you trying to hide it from other people getting on the machine? Or you just don't want them to appear if someone looks at the directory of a certain folder or what?
Well, yeah, all of that. And that kind of leads to the second question because... I was having some issues, I think, with on the PC with hacking, you know, and people, you know, and I want to make sure I'm secure from remotely being accessed.
Mac does a pretty good job of that. The best way to do it is to go in, and you can actually look in sharing and just make sure all services are turned off. And then as far as hiding files goes, there's no true way just to totally hide them from everybody. The nice thing that's built into all Unix operating systems is if you start a directory or a file name with a dot, like, for instance, you make, like, you know, dot, you know, my hidden files. Anyone going into that folder casually or taking a directory, they're not going to see it. They have to put on special switches to be able to see those files. But, again, if you get someone that knows how to look for files, I mean, I'm not going to take a directory and not see the hidden files. I always say, like, hey, show me the hidden files, too. So it's not that good of a way. If you want to, like, make things tricky, you can actually start off file names, like, with spaces or double spaces. You can even have a directory that's called two spaces, to where if someone takes a directory, they just don't really see it. You know, and you can do that by doing quote and then two spaces and a quote, you know, either in the Explorer or, like, from the command line.
Okay.
But that's about as close as you can get, except if you go, like, you know, stenography or...
I will say this, that if you are trying to protect your computer from potentially being hacked by hiding files on the system, you're already... You're just giving up that they're on your computer. I would be more interested in keeping the computer from being accessed. And a lot of stuff like, I mean, it's very hard for someone to get on your computer and start browsing around. If you've got a router in place, that's going to help mitigate most of those concerns because there's no direct access to any computers behind the router. Are you using a router?
No.
Okay. You're connected directly to your cable modem or DSL modem?
Actually, I was doing that with the PC, and with the Mac, I was just going to keep it offline altogether.
So you're only worried about somebody who might sit down and at the computer keyboard and hunt around.
Well, those kind of hackers. I'm learning as we talk here. I'm learning now because I was under the impression that you could still, if you're close enough or whatever, be able to get into a system like that remotely.
If that computer's not online or on a network, it can only be accessed from the keyboard.
Oh, really?
The joke is the only way you can really make a computer secure is to, like, unplug it from the network. And if you've already done that, then you're kind of there.
If your computer is not connected to a network where other computers can see it and not connected to the internet, then all you need to do is password protect it at the login screen, and you'll be safe from just about 99.9% of everything.
Okay. And say, for instance, now this is, I'm probably shooting to the moon with this one. But, say, for instance, I did step away and I'm keeping it offline. But someone was able to come in the room while I wasn't there. Is it possible that they could have, like,
locked?
Huh? Hold on. Let him finish his question. Is it possible they could what?
To, you know, especially if it wasn't, password protected, if you can just turn it on and then drop a program on there.
Yes, that's very possible. If I have access to your box, if I have access to your computer, I can do about anything I want to it, up to and including picking it up and walking away with it. So if that kind of security, you have to really, you know, here's in the workspace. This is where you see it the most. You know, in the workspace where multiple employees, all these employees, they have their own computers. So conceivably, I could walk over to my coworker's computer and I could sit down at his desk and I could do whatever I wanted to his computer. I could drop a program on there. I could erase his files, so forth. So all computers have the ability to where you can lock the terminal. Basically, you lock the terminal, and if I sit down at the computer, I can't do anything to it till I supply the password to log into the computer.
Okay.
So you can do this with the Mac. You can do it with the Mac where you could put it to sleep, and when you wake it back up, you have to enter a password. Or if you're going to walk away from it, there's a hot corner in the Mac. You can throw the mouse to one side, and it locks the workstation.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds like you might need to, you know, I wouldn't sweat it overly much that somebody's going to break into your house or come and plant something on your computer to harvest your data. I'd be more worried that somebody would come into your place and just take the computer and go.
Right.
I've not heard of too many situations where people have come home from vacation and found their computer was hacked.
Unless you live in a dorm with other students.
Right.
I've heard of
situations where people will play pranks on computers where, like, somebody will take and sit down at your computer and take a screenshot of your desktop and then hide all of your icons and use that screenshot as the wallpaper and try to click on stuff and nothing works.
That's crazy.
All right. Well, listen, if there's...
Is it time for one last little thing?
Yeah.
Well, shucks. It slipped my mind just when I said it.
all right. Well, you can always email it to us or call back next week.
Okay.
All right. Thanks for your call. Okay. Bye.
He didn't say, but he might be a student in a dorm with, like, a roommate, you know?
Okay, that's a good point.
Yeah, I mean...
I didn't think about that.
Could be worried about...
I'm too old to remember being in a dorm and stuff.
And you didn't have a computer, probably, when you were last in a dorm, too.
Get your hands off my abacus.
That's my TI calculator!
My abacus. There's an extra bead on here.
You had to worry about me in college because I was digging through the garbage cans looking for passwords at the data center.
You were dumpster diving?
I was
back
dumpster
in the
diving
days?
Wow. And getting so I could play Star Trek on the mainframe. I was hooked on Star Trek.
Oh, I remember my friend playing Star Trek on the mainframe, and he had come home with with the printouts from all the latest moves that they had made.
Yes.
On that big...
yes, on a rolled sheet of paper.
And you had all these like dotted lines. And, yep. And if you crossed your eyes just right, it looked just like deep space with starships in it.
Yes, exactly.
But yeah, you'd have to plot out your turn because you'd have to fire, like you do your move and
aim
attack,
it for the coordinates, right.
Turn-based, you know, mm-hmm. And hopefully he would drive right into
it's
it.
It's like my battleship.
All right. 713-526-5738. Great, that pop-up just showed up on our computer again. I can't see the screen. Groovehouse, who's up next?
All right, up next on the show, we're going to speak with Mark.
Mark, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hi, how's it going?
Good.
I haven't touched my hand a while in doing disk recovery, and I just bought one of these new little IDE external USB rigs. I'm really anxious to try it, but I can't find any software. I got an old IDE disk from a friend of mine that, I mean, I can see it. Hardware-wise, it shows up in Windows Vista as not initialized, but they said that they had data on it. It was running everything. I don't need to boot. I just want to get some files off of it, and I just haven't fiddled with disk recovery software in a while. I can't seem to find titles anymore.
There's
one. I
went
looking from the stores. Partition Commander is there, but I can't get it to work under Vista. Something else has hold of the disk.
There's a program that I use... You got your radio turned down?
Yeah, I got one on crappy cell phones.
Oh, okay. EASUS. EASUS.
EAS.
If you're on speakerphone, turn it off, please.
Okay.
Say it again. Okay.
Are you using speakerphone?
Yeah, okay, hold on. I can do that. I'm like, okay, go ahead.
I love the sound of my own voice, but in real time. All right, so there's a disk utility software made by a company called EASUS, EASUS.
I know them, okay.
And I've had pretty good luck with them. You're going to struggle a bit with a drive that won't show up. I mean, if you can't just browse the file system, you can try using something like this. You have to pay for it. It'll do some basic recovery, but it won't do full recovery, especially with the kind of problem you're seeing right now. But you're going to have to register the software to have a chance of recovering it.
Oh, not a problem. I'm willing to pay. Partition Commander's working. I'm sure it would probably do the job. I'm assuming they did something to the partition, so I may restore it and everything will show up. But I just can't get it to work in Vista right now because I'm guessing something else has hold of the disk and I can't figure out what it is and I'm not that motivated. So I'll try EASUS. I just didn't know any real current titles. Okay, I'll give it a shot. I sure do like the little external USB rig.
Yeah. I have a bunch of old hard drives laying around that I use one of those for just to go and check for old files that I have stored on them.
Man, I can't remember the kind. I got an easy connect. It's very impressive. But, okay, I'll try that. Well, thank you very much. Love right. The show, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Blah, blah, blah. Thanks for your call.
You bet.
All right. 713-526-5738.
Poor Flicted.
The next question's for him, too.
Oh.
All right.
Groovehouse, who's up next?
All right, up next on the show, we're going to speak with Richard.
Richard, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hey, thanks for taking the call.
No problem.
I have a problem. First off, I'm not a top-notch computer user.
Okay.
Secondly, I'm losing my sight. So I cannot see what the damn screen is saying. I want to get something that could talk, that I could hear pretty good. What shall I get?
What type of computer are you using? Is it Windows or Mac?
I got a Windows 7 HP.
Windows 7 has a built-in accessibility tool that will read to you what's on the screen. That's built into Windows 7.
It's built in Windows 7. What do they call this? Windows 7 houseware. Windows 7.
It's in Windows 7. One. If you click on all programs and let's see, accessories.
It's the Ease of Access Center.
Ease of Access Center. And from there, there is a thing called the narrator, and it will read things to you.
It is called the what, sir?
The narrator.
The narrator.
Uh-huh.
There's also a magnifier, too, that may come in handy, where you can move the mouse, and it'll make, like, you know, like three or four words extremely huge. So if you're having a hard time, you know, seeing, like, small words, you can, you know, blow them up to where it's like holding a magnifying glass up in front of the monitor.
If you just, okay. if when you click on the start button and in the search box at the bottom, just type narrator, it'll bring it right up. You can also type ease of access to see the whole ease of access suite.
Ease of access or narrator.
Uh-huh.
Okay, and will that work on a drum drive? I put the jump drive in. I can read what's on it.
It depends on what the file is. If it's a text file, then yes, it should be able to read that to you.
If it's an image file with text, it won't.
Right. If it's an MP3, it won't.
No, I'm talking about a jump drive with letters and correspondence that I have.
It
copied.
Depends on the format of the letters and correspondence. If they are text files. Or HTML, anything text-based, HTML, Word, anything like that, it should be able to read those to you. But if they're PDFs, it may not work. If they're scanned documents into image files, it won't work.
Well, I'm going to try that, and I want to thank you.
All right. Well, you're welcome, welcome.
I hope it works.
Me too.
Bye.
All right. Have a good night. Thanks.
You too.
All right. Dwight, I have a question for you.
Okay.
Should I accept a friend request from Paul McGrath?
From Paul McGrath? On what?
On Facebook.
From Facebook, yes. Yeah? He's a copy editor at the Chronicle.
I see he's a copy editor. Yes. Do we like him?
Yes, we like him.
You know?
He may be editing some of your stuff, so.
Oh, I better be nice to him then.
Yeah.
Okay. Speaking of editing, did you go through all those?
No, I've not been through that, but I will.
Then you're going to have to run the publish on them, I guess. Just let me know, and I'll
I'll do it and schedule them and publish them.
Okay, perfect. Thanks. All right, 713-526-5738. 713-526-KPFT. Paul has a nice smile. He seems like a friendly enough.
He's a very nice guy. Hell of an Aggie.
Hell of an Aggie.
Yeah.
Okay. So I don't even know. I'm so disconnected. I mean, I've been writing this column for the Chronicle for a long time. But I don't know very many people to Chronicle. Although apparently, you know, I'm a minion. 713-526-5738. Bernstein, I'll tell you. All right. Groovehouse. I see you have a call in the queue.
Yes, we do.
You're going to miss me, aren't you?
I miss you already.
All right. I'm all choked up.
Jay says he's done with radio. They treat him like a rag doll.
You know, it's kind of disappointing, too. I haven't been photographing much for the Houston Press. I mean, I want to, and I just haven't.
Right.
You know, things haven't come up. You get all the sweet gigs, and I get an email from Chris. I get an email from Chris Gray, and he wants me to shoot Willie Nelson at the Arena Theater on Sunday, and I won't be here. Yeah. I would have loved to shut that show. You want to do it, Barry?
Yeah, can I go as you? I wanted to see Willie Nelson. I missed out.
I can't see him. I would love to have photographed him, but I'm very disappointed. Are you going to do it? Did he contact you, or you got something else?
I got something going on that day.
Oh.
Yeah.
Big doings.
Interesting. Willie in town, but not playing the rodeo.
Interesting.
Playing someplace else, yeah.
They might have to get a mechanical bull in there.
Hmm.
All right. Hmm. You don't say.
You don't say.
All right. So, yeah, Groovehouse, who's up?
Up next on the show, we're going to speak with Dave.
Dave, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Road again. I can't wait to get
there. Something or another again.
Yeah,
evading anyway. All my taxes with my friends.
Hey, I got a smartphone that's not really as smart as I think it's supposed to be.
Oh, really?
I'm not even smart enough to call you all to figure out what my problem is. Anyway, I download podcasts and listen to my stuff on that smartphone, and then I'll play it in the car. I'll play it. So much stuff on it that I'll wear the battery down, so I'll try to charge as I'm listening to it. But as it's charging, it'll make humming noise while it's actually charging. It seems to cycle when it's charging.
Are you charging it through a USB port in the car, or are you charging it through the cigarette lighter?
All of the above, because I have a cigarette lighter that has multiple ports, and I'll have everything.
All right, well, now let me be clear. There are some cars that have dedicated USB connectors.
No, that.
Okay, so you're connecting it to your cigarette lighter.
And then an adapter.
And then an adapter that goes to USB.
Right.
Now, the noise that you're hearing, obviously, is interference from the electrical system, probably from that adapter. Did you buy a cheap adapter?
Yes.
Okay, well, I can't guarantee that a more expensive one would reduce that noise, but it's possible.
How old is your car?
05 Hyundai XG350.
I bought this one that I've not noticed whether it had any noise on it. I bought one that has, it's like this one that's just a little plug. It goes right in, and it has two USB ports on it. But then I realized my car had a dedicated USB charger on it, so I started using that.
I definitely don't have that.
But I'd be curious to know if maybe a better adapter. Now, who makes a smartphone?
The Walmart.
Well, that could be a problem right there.
Okay.
Sound like a shopping cart with a bad wheel. I don't know.
It's not supposed to be like that, I don't guess. Or is there like a...
Well, it's obviously some kind of interference that's coming from the electrical system into the audio. So it could be that it's just a cheap phone and that the electrical charge causes it to vibrate and do weird things, but it's also possible that it's the charger. But... You know, you could try a different phone if you want to go that route just to see, or you could buy another charger and see if that helps.
I'm just kind of playing around with it and see what happens, I guess. I thought maybe there was something.
I don't have a ready fix for you. I don't have it's one of those. And you do
it probably thing. Is the cheap adapter.
It could be if it's a cheap phone, it could also be that.
Right.
And how are you getting the phone audio into your stereo?
Through one of those, an FM frequency.
Oh, you're using one of those transmitters that sets it up as a radio station?
Those are going to sound bad no matter what.
Yeah, that's where you're getting your interference from. It's susceptible to all kinds of stuff. So it doesn't make that noise when when you're not charging it, right?
Sometimes I use a cassette, you know, through the cassette and then through the output on the phone.
Okay, you need to update your car.
I do the same thing. I have a cassette thing, and I have no problem when charging my phone. So
you have a cassette thing?
Yeah.
That plugs into your cassette player? Yes.
Cassette will work. The thing is, even with old AM radios, you used to be able to hear like engine sounds and things like that. Any kind of electrical current that isn't shielded is going to get picked up on that FM receiver sometimes.
Well, the cassette is actually a pretty good sound quality.
It is.
Yeah, it's not bad.
Yeah.
I used to have one of those for my CD Walkman to plug it in the cassette player of my car. But, yeah, you got a number of different things you're jumping through, so interference is a problem.
Okay, I guess I'll get the new car then.
Get a new car. You have our permission.
It's a great excuse to get a new car. Get one,
especially
Bluetooth.
One that does Bluetooth and all of that good stuff.
By the way, is your phone a Kyocera?
No, it's ZTE.
ZTE, yeah.
ZTE, I'm looking at it now. Walmart.
Yep.
All right. Well, good luck.
Okay. Thanks.
Thanks for your call. All right. 713-526-5738. I was disappointed that my, I have a 2012 Accord. Of course, they really finally got the audio stuff right with the 2013 figures. Mm-hmm. So I don't have the Bluetooth audio, but I do have a built-in USB. Which will see my phone as an iPod, it's an iPhone, and give me controls in my.
Right.
But it doesn't seem to do is take audio over that USB from things like Pandora and so forth, which is unfortunate.
Yeah, I have in the Prius, it'll do that. You can run that on there.
The new Honda apparently has a Pandora controller and all of that built in. So,
right. In fact, what's cool. Is that when it's playing Pandora, the album art comes up on the touchscreen.
Really?
Yes.
In the car. That's pretty cool.
So you have a color, you have a like a VGA kind of touchscreen
display. Right, in the Prius. So, yeah. By the way, the latest on Consumer Reports website, and I presume it's going to be in the next issue, there is a whole series of stories on the electronics in automobiles and kind of what the current state of the art is. And Consumer Reports' take is that there's a lot of convenience, but the interfaces are still crap and in some cases make it harder to do things than it used to be. For example, tuning a specific radio station, you know, where before you just turned a knob and now you have to kind of fiddle with stuff on the touchscreen. It's actually harder. So that's a real interesting story. And I may write something about it in the morning in my blog.
Swell. All right, 713-526-573. About 20 minutes left in the show, give or take an outro. So we've got time to get some more calls in. We got two in the queue, an open line. So Groovehouse is dealing with his impending grief by throwing himself into his job. All right, Groovehouse.
Yes.
Who do we have up next?
Up next, we're going to speak with Robert.
Robert, you're on the air for Technology Bites.
Good evening, gentlemen. I'm running Windows 8 on a brand new HP. And I'm having issues with Outlook. The emails come intermittently. I hit restart, stays, and restart forever. I put the computer off. Sometimes the email is turned back on.
You know, you're really breaking up. Hello, Robert. You're really breaking up. Are you on a speakerphone or something?
Say again?
You're really breaking up. Are you on a speakerphone or something?
Yeah, I'm driving on my cell phone as I'm driving. But anyway, I'm having email issues with Outlook in Windows 8.
What version of Outlook?
I want to find out if there's any patches that are available to fix the solution.
What version of Outlook?
The latest version of Outlook. I think Outlook was 2010.
2013 or 2000? The latest is 2013.
Well, it's not 2013. It's 2010 that's running on Windows 8.
2010 on Windows 8 shouldn't be a problem. There are updates for Office and Outlook that you can get from Microsoft Update. But what's the actual problem that you're having with Outlook?
Well, the emails are coming in intermittently. Sometimes they come in, sometimes they don't. It says there's like 50 of them in the queue, but you know they don't come up on the screen. Yet I shut the computer off and reboot. And sometimes they come in, sometimes they don't.
How are you getting your email? Who's your email provider?
Suddenlink,
and so it's popped.
Well, we've had discussions, so we're blue in the face with them.
It's,
they just say, you know, go back to Microsoft.
Well, Outlook occasionally has a problem where it will come up in, say, offline mode. And so it won't bring down any new messages until you hit send and receive. So you have to look and see if Outlook is maybe in offline mode when you're seeing that your mail's not coming down.
I've seen it on my iPhone, no issues.
I understand that, but Outlook is just a mail client that talks to the mail server to get your mail. Now, Outlook is designed, the main way you use Outlook is it constantly polls the server to see if there's new email and it downloads it. But if Outlook is not in online mode, it's in a mode called offline mode, it doesn't necessarily query the server unless you tell it to. So you could be sitting there for an hour thinking I've got no new email, and then if you hit send and receive, all of a sudden, boom, here come down a bunch of new emails. So you have to determine if you're in online mode or offline mode. First of all, see, that could be the problem. How big is your mail? How much mail do you have?
Oh, I get 20 emails a day.
Okay, that's not a lot, but that's
no,
reasonable.
Not a lot.
And have you verified all the settings in Outlook for,
we verified the settings initially when we first got the computer with Microsoft, go to their help center and they helped do everything, set everything up correctly, transferring things over from an older computer that died. And we got it running and it was just fine. And then, email came in for several weeks, and it just went back to intermittent.
And how do you get your internet? You get it through Suddenlink as well?
It's through Suddenlink, comes in through Suddenlink, through the cable, because I'm running a virtual private network for my company computer. That comes in no issues. Gmail comes in with no issues. Going to the internet, it's just Outlook that I'm having issues with my own private mail.
your own private mail with Outlook. Try to. Well, I would be curious to know, like you say, mail's not coming in. I would be curious to know what happened if you hit send and receive and see if that would cause the mail to come in all of a sudden. Then we would.
I can send some messages out sometimes, no issue.
I know, but if the mail server does not do it, if Outlook does not actually execute a send and receive against the mail server, it will not pull your mail down. It should, when you set up Outlook by default, it should just pull in new email like every couple of minutes. It should check or even faster. But every once in a while, Outlook goes into an offline mode. It says, I'll tell you what, we're going to disconnect, and I'm just going to ask you to email me if you could get your email to work via the website, and we'll see if we can help you sort it out. But that's just kind of unlistenable with the way your phone setup's going, so I apologize for that. All right, Groovehouse?
Yes.
Who's up next?
All right, up next on the show, we are going to speak with Kevin.
Kevin, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hey, y'all. My phone's about to die, so if I just disconnect, then that's why.
Okay.
Well, I talked to you guys about a few months ago, maybe a little bit longer. I don't know if you guys remember. I had been banned from a language website. Y'all were giving me tips on how to renew my IP address.
Yeah, sort of.
Well, I have a different question now. So I have an iPhone 4S. It's a Sprint iPhone 4S. My service is with T-Mobile. Aside from telling you everything I've read, I'm just going to ask you, is it possible to work with T-Mobile?
Sprint iPhone 4S is going to probably be locked to Sprint as the carrier. So it has to, now that it's, I assume that you are not doing business with Sprint. So did you buy the phone from Sprint or did you buy it secondhand?
I bought it secondhand.
All right.
I do not think that will work with T-Mobile because it's a CDMA phone.
Right.
The iPhone 5 CDMA model has a SIM slot.
I think
in
the
it.
4S did too.
The 4S does too.
I think
the
it did.
4S does have a SIM slot.
It does, but I think the 4S all the carriers were still locking them. So like the CDMA carriers, it had a SIM slot and you could put a SIM card in it. But the SIM card slot was locked so that only their SIM card, like SIM cards through Sprint or whoever, would actually work in it if you wanted to actually go global with it and use it on GSM networks.
You may be now, able to get iPhone, Sprint unlock it for
maybe.
You.
Maybe. The iPhone 5 was completely unlocked from, I believe, from the CDMA carriers. Like even the GSM portion was
right,
completely
was
unlocked.
Right.
But the 4S, I think it was locked.
It's still locked. Sprint won't unlock it for me, but there's a YouTube video. I don't know if you guys know anything about this. I'm going to mention it real quick. I'm sure my phone's about to die. It's called a GPP SIM that they make in China, and basically going through the steps of unlocking and then inserting this GPP SIM along with a T-Mobile SIM card into the phone, and then unlocks. Have you heard anything about that? Do you know if that's legit?
It's legit. There's that, and there's another one that is a little bit more expensive that tends to work a little bit better. But yeah, there's SIM card hacks that let you unlock and root your phone by inserting one of these, you know, special SIM cards.
Okay. And
is better. I've used that. I've had some friends.
I didn't hear that.
It's
I
don't know how to pronounce it. I think it's like Gavi or Givi. It's Gevey.
Uh-huh.
They're $15-$20, but those will do it too.
But I mean, is there a specific buyer that you know of that I can buy from so I won't get screwed?
GevyPro.com, GevyPro.com.
GevyPro.com.
Yeah, Gevey. Just Google for Gevey unlock SIM.
Those are not factory unlocks, right? So I can't, if I do it with that, I can't update the firmware, the software, right?
I don't know about that. I don't know.
Okay. All right, but it is possible and it is legitimate. It can happen, right? So, Okay, cool. Thanks, guys.
All right, thanks for your call. Mm-hmm. All right, all that hassle and effort.
Yeah, but
get a 4S on contract with your favorite provider. And
I've been trying to get an old iPhone unlocked, but a friend gave it to me, and so even though it's like 4 years out of contract, and it was bought on AT&T's network, and I'm on AT&T's network, and I used it for several years with my SIM card on AT&T's network. They won't unlock it. They won't let me unlock it unless I get the original proof of purchase.
I'm having a hard time. I've got some friends that just moved to Dubai, and they didn't. It's with Verizon, and Verizon would have unlocked it for international service had they called and said, hey, we're good customers. We're going to, you know, Dubai, but they've already gotten there, and there's no Verizon there, so they can't send the unlock code. So I had to go through that whole thing. So I actually got one of the Givi cards and mailed it to Dubai a couple days ago, and we're hoping that shows up. Yeah, I've never had to unlock an iPhone before. It looks like the iPhone 4S is the worst kind to try and get through as well.
Well, that's just terrible. I like my iPhone being unlocked. I've already used it overseas once.
Awesome. See, I bought my 4S outright.
Yeah, and that was pretty. Price. That was pricey, right?
Pricey, but I put Russian SIMs in it when I was in Russia and had zero problems.
And how did you unlock your phone?
It came unlocked. Verizon iPhone 5s.
Oh, you're on Verizon. That's
their
right.
Carrier unlocked.
Yes.
And so... you go to the mobile store. I went to a Vodafone in Salzburg and picked up a SIM. It's a good deal. It's like 30 euros, 25 euros, and you get some minutes and you get some data. What's weird is they throttle you on the download after, I think, a gig or half a gig. They'll start to throttle you.
Yeah, they did that in Russia, too.
But they don't throttle your uploads, it doesn't seem. So if you're like me and you're just
sending photos and stuff,
it's a blast.
Yeah, I didn't really upload much, but they definitely throttled down.
I was trying to pull down a web page, and it was like, ugh, this is painful. But I would upload an Instagram, and boom, no problem. That was kind of interesting. All right, Groove House?
Yes.
Who's up next?
Up next on the show, we're going to speak with Bob.
Bob, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Yeah, I got an iPhone 4S also. And my problem is I had a BlackBerry.
Uh-huh. That is a problem.
And AT&T. And I got an the 4S. And all my pictures and stuff. I want to know how can I get them from the BlackBerry to the 4S.
One of the things you can do, you got the phone from AT&T?
Yes, yes.
AT&T has the ability to move data from one phone to another.
Even
BlackBerry to iPhone, yes.
Yes, they can do that.
But even pictures, maybe.
Yes,
stuff.
I think so. Give them give that a try. I know that I've seen them do it at Radio Shack.
Now, it's possible that
AT&T.
The other option you have is that you should be able to take the BlackBerry and connect it to your computer with a USB and then browse, you know, like basically like clicking on a folder. You click on the BlackBerry. You should be able to see your image folder. And you could drag those images out of the image folder onto your computer desktop. And if you wanted to put them on the phone, I suppose you could do that. You could do the same thing with it. Because with my iPhone, I could connect it to my computer. I could double-click on the iPhone, and I can see my image folder, and I can...
Yeah, well, I don't have a computer.
No computer, just smartphones. So BlackBerry and now an iPhone. Then your best bet...
I'm on my son's thing.
Okay. Well, try to your provider and see if they can transfer those files for you.
Yeah, my son went and got the phone for me, and he said that they couldn't do it. Or maybe they talked to the wrong guy at AT&T.
Well, it's possible I'm wrong. It's possible that I'm wrong.
Yeah. They can definitely do contacts. I haven't seen any direct mentions of them actually moving pictures and things like that, but I'm still
looking around. I got some of it over. I got the contacts over, but I didn't get the pictures over.
Yeah, I don't know what to say on that.
But I could hook the BlackBerry up to my son's.
You might be able to take the BlackBerry and connect it to a computer.
Yeah.
And browse the file system and get the files off of it that you want, the image files off of it that you want.
Browse the image files?
Yeah.
Okay. I'll do that. Then after it gets on the computer, he can transfer it over to the
If you
the
care
iPhone.
To have them on your iPhone, yes, they can be then dragged. You can also hook the iPhone up to the computer, open up the image folder, and drop them on there that way.
Okay.
All right?
Yeah, thank you.
Hey, go ahead. Sorry.
All right. Yeah, he's not going to Google anything. Yeah. He doesn't have a computer.
There's an AT&T mobile transfer service.
He's got an iPhone. He might have
He's got an iPhone. He's got some. There's an app that you can get, and he might need to go in there, but it'll do videos, contacts, and pictures. And both of his devices are compatible with it.
What is it?
AT&T mobile transfer is what it's called.
Huh. All right, Groovehouse.
Yes.
Do we have more calls?
We do.
All right, let's speed around.
Let's try and get this one in. Okay. We're going to talk to Pete.
Pete, you're on the air.
Thank you. Well, listen, gentlemen, I appreciate the call. I'm trying to find a more elegant solution to essentially a lot of media. I want something that, if possible, to combine a kind of a media server / storage device, both for like a Blu-ray jukebox, as well as a lot of pictures and HD video that we've taken with phones. You know, we've got a couple of laptops that float around the house, a projector on one floor, and TVs throughout the house. And I was just wondering if there was a smart way of putting all of this data, all of this stuff, having it accessible to all of our devices.
Well, probably the easiest way to do that would be to set up a computer with Windows Media as a Windows Media server.
Okay.
You could put as much hard drive space on there as you want, and then you could have this thing shared out to all your devices, and it would also serve up. I was amazed because I never thought much about Windows Media until I got a smart TV. And then every time I turn on my TV and my wife's, well, there's only one computer left that's Windows in my house, but it's my wife's Vista computer, and turn that thing on, and I go to the input on my TV, and it shows up. So I could play song files onto my TV using HDLNA because it's all on the network. So Windows Media Player is actually a pretty good solution for what you're talking about.
You can also – there also are some external hard drives, including what's called network attached storage drives, that come with built-in DLNA servers. And so you don't actually have to have a whole PC. You could just have a NAS drive. I had a Buffalo brand NAS drive that had a DLNA server, connected it up to my Wi-Fi network, and saw the same thing Jay did. As soon as you turn on your TV, the server appears as one of your options for getting media.
Great. Yeah, I've been looking at, I think HP has a media server that's supposed to do everything you'd ever wanted to do, more stuff than you could probably understand, to do. But again, if I could get away from a PC,
Check out an external hard drive that connects either directly to your router or to some part of your computer network, and that comes with DLNA, and that will do it.
That'll do it. Okay, great. Even if I'm dealing with streaming, see, I've got a jukebox.
Well, we're out of time. We're gonna have to cut this off. But yeah, it should do that. I mean, as long as whatever you're using to stream the audio has access to the drive and where the media is stored to pull the playlist from, should be fine. Okay. Again, Windows Media Player might be a better option because you're going to have all the functionality built into it. But listen, we got to cut you short. I'm sorry about that, and because we're out of time. All right. Well, what a great episode of Technology Bites, even with all the flaws, because the flaws is what makes us perfect. Or something.
Something.
You want to hear some flaws, you tune in next week.
Hey-o. Thanks, Jay.
Well, you know what? I'll get mine when I listen to the podcast. So I could listen to the first 5 minutes of the show, and we're going to take advantage of the fact that Jay's not here and give him a hard time episode. Then y'all knuckle down and do a good show.
Thanks for that, Jay.
You're welcome. Lincoln's impersonation to me, always welcome. So glad to have that. But fortunately, I'm on vacation, and I'm just relaxing in a pool of my own pleasure. On vacation, and you're hateful. Thanks for that, Jay.
Tonight he's blinked.
Yeah. Gotta go. You've listened to Technology Bites. Now we go. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
I'm Dwight.
And he's
Groovehouse.
See you next week for more of this.
During the month of March, KPFT is hosting an online celebration of our birthday at kpft.org. Hi, I'm General Manager Dwayne Bradley. In March of 1970, KPFT went on the air, bringing you great music, news, and culture. We've been bold, funny, intriguing, and enlightening. KPFT has also outlasted virtually every station in the city. While others have disappeared, KPFT has continued its tradition of outstanding radio thanks to listeners like you. In this first week of our birthday celebration, we're asking you to visit kpft.org and to give a dollar a day for the station that brightens your day. Whether you love our music, interviews, or news, KPFT means something to you, and your donation in March will make up for our recent winter shortfall and sustain KPFT into the future. Again, visit kpft.org to celebrate KPFT this spring, and stay tuned for periodic updates on KPFT Houston.
Many of you have been longtime listeners and supporters of KPFT. This station asks you to consider establishing a bequest in your will that benefits KPFT. Supporting KPFT with a legacy gift is an easy decision to make. The future growth and excellence of our station depends on our ability to also build a permanent base of support through an active and successful legacy gift program. The next time you meet with your advisors to review your estate or long-term financial plans, please remember you can include KPFT. Ensure your commitment to public broadcasting continues on. With the help of your attorney, a bequest is simple to put in place. If you need help or have questions, call our development director at 713-526-4000. Again, that's 713-526-4000.